Parsons Corporation. And we'll hear first from Mr. Mayfield.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Trey Mayfield here on behalf of Relator Billy Hunt, who is here on behalf of the United States. This court case presents a straightforward misapplication of the summary judgment standard below. The court below relied on the government knowledge defense, which destroys the scienter element of a False Claims Act claim. However, here there is overwhelming evidence that Parsons committed fraud. The government knowledge defense requires that the government be fully apprised of all relevant, pertinent facts in order for the government to direct a contractor to take a course other than what the contract demands. In this case,
what is the evidence that, or the information that you think that Parsons had that the government did not have?
The key document in this case, Your Honor, is Hoyt Reynolds' six-page comparison of the bids in this case. The bids by Cochise, Armour Group, and Sabre, which stated that Armour Group was far and away the best qualified,
right,
best in class.
But Parsons advised the government that it preferred Armour Group, and it was only because after a series of back and forths that there were only 2 days left to be able to get the contractor into place that it appears that Parsons Group asked for Cochise. What is wrong about that?
What's wrong, Your Honor, is that the premise of your question is factually incorrect. At no time is there any evidence, Parsons can argue to the contrary, but the evidence in this case is that Parsons did not tell Cheryl Jones, the decision maker in this case, anything about Armour Group. There are two pieces of evidence as to what Cheryl Jones knew. One is...
Well, let me ask you a question, though. I mean, Parsons had previously told the government that it thought Armour Group was the better contractor, didn't it?
It had told Wayne Shaw that.
And Wayne Shaw worked for the government.
Wayne Shaw is the lowest level employee in this, but
okay.
Everyone disclaims.
But Wayne Shaw worked for the government.
Wayne Shaw is not the decision maker, however, in this case, Your Honor. And
but Wayne Shaw worked for the government.
He did.
Okay.
But he also was acting, A, ultra vires. He has no right to, A, countermand the contract itself, which gives Parsons full control, or, B, the federal requirement of open bidding.
So let me ask you a question, though. It appears, and you can correct me where I am misunderstanding the record, it appears that at the time that the decision was made, there were 2 days left to mobilize. Is that right or is that wrong?
That's correct.
Okay. And at that point in time, there was only one company that was capable of doing that.
That is false. That is abjectly false, Your Honor.
And why is that so? Because didn't Armour Group say it would take 26 days to be able to mobilize? And I know it said it from the time that they were originally told about it. However, it would take 26 days from the time they were awarded the contract is what I thought they said.
That Parsons emphasizes that. That's part of the bid because, as you just noted, Armour Group was working backwards from the deadline, right? This is how many days to hit February 18th. Which is the day on the ground. However, first, the bid itself says, we can do this earlier if you need us to. That's in the bid that was submitted. That was never communicated to the government. Perhaps, most importantly, and this is why Streck from the Seventh Circuit is important,
say that they could do it immediately?
That's correct. They told that. There is testimony from Robert Linsmeyer at Armour Group that David Wilson, who set up the Armour Group bid, told Parsons representative, Guy Irwin, we can do this immediately. We have all the troops on the ground. We We are ready to do it now. And they knew that, and they did not communicate that, they being Parsons, to Cheryl Jones. They did not communicate, for instance, that Cochise did not have armored vehicles. That was not communicated to her. The whole notion of the urgent and compelling need is the repetition over and over by Parsons that Cochise was the only one available. That was false. So the representation that Cochise was ready and available was false. It did not have 42 people. It did not have armored vehicles. It did not have a quality rating and pass convoys. That's all Hoyt Runnels' evaluation. Moreover, Armored Group was ready at the time, and Parsons knew it and chose not to tell.
What is your evidence that Armored Group was ready at the time, that they could mobilize within 2 days?
Robert Linsmeyer testified in his deposition that all those facts were true that I just outlined to you, that they could do it immediately. They had between 375 people available and 450. But more importantly, what was communicated to Parsons, to Guy Irwin, by David Wilson. Remember, David Wilson's works for Armored Group. Guy Irwin works for Parsons. The communication is, we are ready to go immediately if you need us. We have everything we need. We can go now. So Parsons knew that. Parsons also knew from the bid that was submitted, which it did not share with the government, that the bid said we can move up our deadline. So the question is, if Cheryl Jones had been apprised of all of this information, that Cochise was not ready to go, so that's a false representation, that it had a quality pass record, it did not, that was not Parsons' evaluation, it did not have 42 people, in fact, it had only 22 as of 2 weeks later, Parsons knew all that. That's why the employees were so upset at the ground level. And keep in mind, Parsons has a good story to tell here. The lower-level employees at Parsons in Iraq, they should get a medal. They were great. The problem is the corporation, the knowledge of the employees is attributed to the corporation. And the crucial break is that they did not communicate to the person that everyone acknowledges was the decision-maker here, Cheryl Jones. So we wouldn't be here today if, for instance, Parsons had simply sent a copy of Hoyt Runnels' evaluation, 6 pages, which he already had in hand. They'd had it for nearly a month. If they had said that to Cheryl Jones and said, you know, Mr. Shaw is suggesting that we take Cochise, but that's a terrible idea, and here's why. And then nonetheless, Ms. Jones made that decision, they would have the government knowledge defense. But keep in mind, the government knowledge defense is their burden, their evidentiary burden, and in order to win at summary judgment, they have to show that the evidence excludes the possibility that they did not fully inform the government. In other words, all of the evidence has to go their way to win on summary judgment.
What does Cheryl Jones say about all
so
this?
Unfortunately, Your Honor, Cheryl Jones is no longer with us, and she passed away before deposition. And so as I alluded at the beginning in response to Judge Rosenbaum's question, we have two pieces of information, really three. One is her email upon which Parsons relies. I'll come back to that in a second. So what Cheryl Jones in that says is she repeats what Parsons has told her, and she notes that she's talked to Tim Hiles of Parsons, Wayne Shaw.
All right. In order to accept your argument, though, we would have to assume that even if Cheryl Jones had this missing information, that she would have ordered them to make a different decision.
We don't have to assume anything, Your Honor. That's a jury question. That is materiality. And so the question is, if Cheryl Jones had known all the pertinent information, for instance, that one company didn't have armored vehicles and the other one did,
that she would have made a different decision.
That's correct.
Yeah. We don't have to assume that she would have made a different decision.
You do not. There's no way of knowing that. Now, let's suppose the Army Corps had a position in this litigation and it submitted a declaration saying it made no difference to us.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a piece of evidence that might win the case for them. But we don't have that. What we do have is their witness, Tim Hiles, who communicated with Cheryl Jones saying, I made no mention of Armor Group to Cheryl Jones. Mm-hmm. I had no idea personally that Armor Group was ready to go.
And my next question is the documents that you say that were unavailable. Their argument is that these documents were made after the decision was made.
Yes, Your Honor. So that's a separate count, the two fraudulent documents right. In this case. That was an error of law below by the court. So 3729B4, which defines materiality, says materiality is a document that is capable of influencing. And so what the court below missed is that Documents created after payments have been made can be capable of influencing because the government audits contractors. The government can't possibly keep up. It's an honor system. And so as happened in the triple canopy case in the Fourth Circuit, those scorecards, the fraudulent scorecards purporting to demonstrate that guards could shoot their guns, which they couldn't, were put in the file after that contract had been awarded and after payments had begun. Why did it have a, was it capable of influencing the government's decision? Because if an auditor came through and looked at the file, the auditor would be misled into believing that there were competent guards there. So too here, the two documents you just referenced would have misled an auditor into believing that Cochise was the only company available to fulfill this contract. A blatantly false statement. Even more false, if one accepts every argument about the initial contract, remember what they do is they have a bridge contract called a limited notice to proceed that lasts 15 days. And so the conversation with Cheryl Jones in that email, Cheryl Jones even says right in the middle of that conversation, well, this is temporary and you can rebid it afterwards. Parsons never submits any evidence about why they could not rebid this contract or simply give it to the company that they already knew was qualified, Armor Group. That's what's missing in this case, Your Honor, the dearth of any substantive information being transmitted to Cheryl Jones. And if I could back up a minute, the district court rested on the premise that Cheryl Jones directed Parsons to do what it did, to direct it to take Cochise. That's not correct. That's not a correct reading of the email, nor is it correct according to any of Parsons' witnesses. Even Wayne Shaw and Steve Hamilton and everyone else admits the government had no authority to order them to single source the contract. It was exclusively Parsons' decision. But moreover, whether or not one accepts the district court's premise that this was a direction or a suggestion, and a suggestion is what her supervisor, Lydia Talese, says it is, it doesn't matter for purposes of the government knowledge defense. The question is, what did Cheryl Jones know? And so the obligation is upon Parsons to demonstrate that it provided, in the words of the case law, all pertinent information so that Cheryl Jones could know, well, I've got two different contractors at very different costs and very different quality levels. One is evaluated as being far more able to protect the lives of the people in this convoy. The other one, according to Parsons, has none of those capabilities except some personnel on the ground. Keep in mind, Hoyt Runnels' evaluation is devastating to Cochise. He says the only thing they have to offer is some people, some personnel, in his words. They don't have anything else. And in fact, one of the reasons the cost was going to be so much higher is that when Cochise made its calculations, it did only a 72-hour week for its personnel. This is an all-the-time job, 24/7 in the theater. And so Ronald recognized that Cochise's cost would be astronomically higher because it didn't actually incorporate the time that would be spent by its employees. I see my time has expired.
All right, thank you. You've reserved 3 minutes. We'll hear next from Mr. Sayer.
Your Honor, I don't know what happened. It's actually Mr. Dyer.
Oh, I apologize, Mr. Dyer. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Aaron Dyer. For the last 11 years, I've had the, almost 12, the privilege of representing Parsons as lead counsel in this case since the government declined to intervene and the case was unsealed. The case has changed immensely during that time. For the first 9 years of this case, the entire crux of this case was that Jesse Johnson, Colonel Jesse Johnson from Cochise, who's one of our great American war heroes, bribed the Army Corps of Engineers to give them a contract, or to get Parsons to give them a contract, and somehow that Parsons was responsible for that. And when on opposition to summary judgment, after discovery had been completed, they withdrew that allegation entirely because...
But they could do that. I mean, if the evidence changes or whatever. Let's see if we can get to the core of the issue here. And the core of the issue here is whether there is evidence in the record that that Parsons had knowledge that it did, important and material knowledge that it did not turn over to the government. And your friend on the other side of the aisle here says that it did. He says that Parsons knew that Armor Group was ready and able to mobilize within 2 days, and that Parsons did not share that that information or the fact that Parsons was better equipped, that it would cost the government less, that it had its own equipment, that it had a lot more individuals available who were highly trained, et cetera. What is your response to that?
Your Honor, and Mr. Mayfield, after 12 years, truly is my friend, but he's wrong in this case. And the reason he's wrong goes back to what I was just saying about the change in allegations. Now that there are no longer allegations of bribery in this case, the relevant pool for who knew the information changes. It's no longer about Cheryl Jones.
Okay, but, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but is there evidence in the record that Parsons knew that Armor Group could mobilize within 2 days?
There is one statement in the record. Everything in the record, I'll tell you what that is. And it's a statement from Mr. Linsmeyer about overhearing a conversation that he believes was with David Wilson at his company, who he believes was with Guy Irvin. That is the only information they have. Everything else is in the bids. All of the bids went to the government. The bid said 26 days from the date of the award, which hadn't occurred yet. That's the whole problem here, is on February 16th, the award hasn't occurred because Parsons has escalated this. And the government, all three individuals, have every bit of that information about the capabilities, including the fact that Cochise has already been doing this for the last 2 years. They've been doing the exact same thing. So that's why Steve Hamilton and Wayne Shaw are directing Parsons to use Cochise. The only thing in that conversation, it's not at all what I know he was loosely paraphrasing, and he said that Wilson told Guy Irvin, we are ready to go immediately, 100% ready to go, we can go right away. That is nothing like what Linsmeyer said. Linsmeyer basically said he overheard Wilson say, but we could go sooner than the 26 days. That is the only thing in the record that has anything to do with that. All of the information that that Parsons has is that they cannot go, that they are not ready. The only company that is on the ground is Cochise. The only company that has weapons in place, training for these missions, has been doing these missions. Remember, this is a rollover from the USA environmental contract, and the testimony from Robert Brooks at Cochise in the record is we rolled right into the next contract. We didn't even know there was a break. It was just as soon as, one day we were working for USAE, the next day we were working for Parsons. On the 22nd of February, they rolled right in. A key question here is not just whether or not Cochise could actually go. I'm sorry, Armor Group could actually go. The question is, what did Parsons believe? And that's very clear from the record. There is no contradictory evidence. Every witness at Parsons believed that the only company that could perform, that was ready to go, was Cochise. You got to remember, this is not a situation where Parsons is trying to hire Cochise. Parsons is doing exactly the opposite. They want Armor Group. They did their evaluation. They decided, based on the fact that Colonel Johnson sent a two-page application, a bid proposal, and the other companies did a very professional bid proposal, that Cochise was not the best choice. They ranked them third. They went to Cheryl Jones, there is no evidence in the record that she is the superior of Stephen Hamilton. In fact, the testimony in the record is that they're equal. When they went to Cheryl Jones to double check whether the Army Corps in Huntsville would be okay with this direction from Steve Hamilton, it was because they wanted to hire Armor Group as their choice. And they were being told, no, they can't do this. The elimination of those bribery allegations had a second impact in addition to changing who the government is, because there was a concern that Judge Burke correctly had that if Steve Hamilton and Wayne Shaw knew about an allegation that they were involved in bribery, that doesn't count as government knowledge. They're in it. They're part of the alleged conspiracy. But once that goes away, then there is no longer a consideration. Once there are no allegations, then the question is, what information did Wayne Shaw, Cheryl Jones, and Steve Hamilton have? And what's very clear from the record, including from Cheryl Jones's email that she sends on February 17, is they have all the reports. Steve Hamilton says he's reviewed, not the reports, the bid at the proposals. They've reviewed the bid proposals. They've chosen who they think's best. Wayne Shaw says the same thing. Cheryl Jones says, after Tim Hiles raises this to her attention, she says, after our conversation, she has a conversation with Steve and Wayne, and they discuss the facts, and then they get back to Tim Hiles. And that's when she says, when he says, okay, we have a plan. If you're going to tell us that the directive is going away, we're going to recompete this contract. And she said, no, you're not. How are you going to get that done in 2 days? And so their only option is to sole source. And the people who will tell you that, will be Tim Hiles and Guy Irvin from Parsons, but it'll also be Stephen Hamilton from the government. Stephen Hamilton says, that was the only way of getting this done. That was the only way of getting this done was to sole source it to Cochise because they were the only ones who could do it. Guy Irvin said it would be impossible to get anybody else there. The contrary evidence, there's not any. The weighing of evidence that took place in Bibby, that Judge Wilson, you wrote the Bibby opinion, the weighing of evidence that took place in that case that caused it to be remanded didn't happen here. There is no weighing of any evidence on any of the issues. The government knowledge, the cases are, they're kind of strange in that they, some of them say it negates falsity, some of them say it negates knowledge of falsity, some of them say it negates materiality. And I think the answer is it negates all of them, and including knowledge of materiality, which is a requirement under it. And I think the answer is it negates all of them. If you are talking to the government, you're sharing the information, the government knows everything and is working with you to solve something, then your statement's not false. You don't think it's false. It's clearly not material to them, especially when, if you look at the materiality analysis, it focuses on things like, and this is again from Bibby taking it from Escobar, it focuses on, is it a condition of payment? No, that doesn't apply. Is it central to the agreement? That doesn't apply. Does the government react based on their knowledge? And there's been no reaction by the government. The government didn't stop payment. They paid all the way through what Escobar called very strong knowledge of a lack of materiality. The other impact that the change had is on the conspiracy. And the conspiracy is what they've used since they deleted count one, basically, by saying they were no longer pursuing it. The conspiracy has been their catch-all. Well, we're talking about a certification theory, and everybody says that's the primary theory, but there's no certification signed by Parsons at all. So they say, but conspiracy envelops all of it. Well, let me tell you what the record says about conspiracy. It says that there is only one witness that can testify that there was some kind of agreement. And that witness is Mr. Billy Hunt. And in his deposition, Mr. Hunt says that the agreement, I asked him about it, he says the agreement was between Wayne Shaw and Jesse Johnson and Cochise. And then I go through with him, and this is on the site to this, is document 43-2, and it's pages 44, and it's a lengthy discussion through pages 47. And I take him through every individual at Parsons who could be somewhat involved and ask if they were part of the conspiracy. And he says no to every one of them, all the names you've just heard. And then I ask him, was there somebody at Parsons who was part of the actual agreement to violate the law between Wayne and Jesse Johnson? Well, no, sir, I do not know that. So Judge Burke was right about you can't have an agreement in a civil conspiracy. It's unlike our criminal conspiracies where you don't have to have an underlying substantive count. You can just have an agreement. Civil, you have to. But you don't even need to get there because there is no evidence in the record at all that there was any kind of agreement. Let me just finish. What's clear here is the government wanted Cochise. They made it very clear. They directed it. When Parsons complained, they changed that, and then they followed up. Tim Hiles, in his testimony, says his understanding of what Cheryl Jones wanted was that she wanted Wayne Shaw and Steve Hamilton to get what they wanted. But she wasn't going to do it by directing Parsons to do it because there were concerns about the legality of a direction of a subcontract award. But she figured out another way to get there. That is the only testimony that's in there. I want to point out that they misquote Ms. Tedeschi in their argument. They said Lydia Tedeschi, who was Cheryl Jones's boss and was on the email and testified about her understanding and what she understood this to mean. They said in their brief, in their reply brief at page 6, as Jones' supervisor Lydia Tedeschi testified, Parsons was not required to comply with Jones' instructions. And Jones was, quote, not really directing Parsons. She was just talking to them. That is completely out of context. And if you look at document 43.4, page 36, page 36, you'll see that what Ms. Tedeschi said was, in my email on February 6th, 17th, I wasn't directing Parsons. I was sending that email to Steve Hamilton and Wayne Shaw. I was talking to them. It's a completely different tone. She's not saying I wasn't directing Parsons, I was just talking to them. She's saying I was just talking to Steve Hamilton and Wayne Shaw. That eliminates any concern, because every other bit of her testimony says that this was a direction to Parsons. But you don't have to reach that, because what really matters is, did Parsons believe that they were being directed? This is, you know, we know that's what they believed, because we know they wanted Cochise, because they had raised the issue with the government in the first, because they wanted Armor Group. They had raised this issue because of that. And they believed, based on every bit of information they had, that the only way they could do that, that the only way they could get somebody by February 18th, was to choose the company that was there and ready to go. And we know they believed they had no choice, even though legally they had to actually make the selection, because if they had had a choice, they would have chosen Armor Group. We ask you to affirm the court's ruling below on all of those grounds and keep the case in its current status. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Dyer. And Mr. Mayfield, you've reserved 3 minutes.
If I might address briefly some of the points my friend raised. First, 14 years elapsed between the time of the facts of this case in 2006 and when discovery began in 2020. During that time, people died, including, unfortunately, Ms. Jones. Documents disappeared. Memories faded. So by the time this case reached summary judgment, there was a vast dearth of information about the bribery and kickback information.
Okay, but it's your burden to prove that, you know, there was some kind of fraud that occurred here on the part of Parsons.
Absolutely. So that's why we did what Rule 11 obligates us to do. We stripped out all those obligations. We told the court we are not in any way suggesting that this is a bribery case, no matter what Mr. Hunt may believe, because the evidence isn't there. But once those things are stripped out, as Your Honor alluded, this is a run-of-the-mind False Claims Act case. It is a false certification case because the requirement, both by law and under the contract, is that competitive bidding take place. And only if there is an urgent and compelling need, as my friend puts it, can you get out of that. Now, my friend said that everyone at Parsons agreed that this was an urgent and compelling need. Well, let me...
Do we know why Wayne Shaw, the project manager, ordered Parsons to reissue the request for bids when Cochise didn't have a basic ordering agreement the first time around?
The testimony, Your Honor, and this is not disputed, the testimony is that essentially Parsons had a qualifying list of known vendors. They had not previously worked with Cochise. And so Coach Easton complained and said we weren't given a chance to bid, and so that's why it was rebid on that basis. Essentially, they weren't on the vendor list with the approved checklist.
That doesn't sound like they just really wanted Coach East from the very beginning, no matter what.
Well, most people at Parsons were not aware of Coach East, at least in the contracting division. Wayne Shaw knew it because, as my friend pointed out,
I meant the government.
Right. Wayne Shaw certainly did. Whether or not Cheryl Jones did, there's nothing in her email that suggests that she had prior knowledge of Coach East, but Hamilton and Shaw certainly would have because they were in Iraq on the ground at the time. So stripping out all of the bribery allegations, you have a simple False Claims Act case. And I'll read what Mr. Runnels said. Keep in mind, Mr. Runnels is the key witness from Parsons, the guy who evaluates the bid. There was no reason to single source Cochise. If there had been a reason, a good reason, then we would consider it. But there was no reason to single source Cochise. That's on page 28 through 29 of our brief, Your Honor. There are other Parsons employees who say the same thing. And so my friend's representation that everyone at Parsons agreed that this was urgent and compelling is simply not true. The breakdown occurs in the communication between Parsons and Cheryl Jones. And so under the government knowledge defense, to get past summary judgment on that basis, they have to prove that Cheryl Jones knew all the pertinent facts that we're discussing today about the relative merits of Armor Group and Cochise, and crucially, that Cochise was the only game in town at the time that decision was made. The evidence is to the contrary that Parsons knew otherwise because of what was in the bid and because of what they were verbally told.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we have your argument.
Thank you.
We'll be in recess.